Hello and welcome back to RE Radar. This is the fifth episode of RE Radar, and as you can see, I am back to being just me. Just a solo episode. The last two, I've been interviewing some industry professionals, and now I'm going to be a solo one, and I'm still going to provide you with some excellent information as we're going to be doing some very up-to-date, I guess. On the news info with talking about NAR and the big settlement and lawsuit that they are involved in. So NAR, the National Association of Realtors, they have currently have a settlement proposed as a counter to the $1.8 billion lawsuit that they are facing due to supposed price commission fixing. Let's just jump right in here, and I'm going to try to focus mainly on the facts because circulating the media, you have a whole lot of misinformation. It's being spread by major news publications. I mean, it's even being spread by the current president of the United States with spewing false information by saying that this settlement will finally allow Americans to negotiate their commissions and help people save money on their real estate transactions. Well, newsflash, real estate commissions have always been negotiable and will continue to be negotiable following this settlement. That right there is the biggest misconception that seems to be out there. Major publications and people of influence are posting about that. They're saying how real estate commissions will now be negotiable following this settlement if it is agreed upon. But that's just false because it has always been negotiable. There is no law that says real estate commission needs to be blank percent of selling price. There are actually laws that directly prohibit this from happening. Real estate agents aren't even allowed to discuss with other real estate agents what they personally charge for their clients. So if we're not allowed to be discussing our personal prices, how is this real estate commission fixing taking place? Now, of course, there are real estate agents when discussing their fee, they'll simply tell the client they are discussing with this with that this is what I charge. If you want to pay it, great. I'll be happy to work with you. If you want me to work for you for less money, then that's not going to work out. You should probably go talk with another real estate agent and maybe they'll have a lower fee. Or maybe they'll lower their fee for you where this one agent won't do that. As a real estate agent has the right to kind of set their own rate for what they're willing to work for. It's just like how a lawyer has their hourly rate. I mean, a real estate agent is just like any other job in the world where they are providing a service, and a real estate agent knows what their service is worth, and that's what they're going to charge you. Now, as a buyer or a seller, you have every right to negotiate with that real estate agent to ask for a lower fee. But now I'm going to pose this question back to you. If you're in a hospital room, are you going to ask the surgeon what their fee is and then ask them to, could you do this surgery for a little less? Could you maybe take off $1,000 for me? No. Their fee is what they're worth and what they provide for you. It's the same thing with a realtor. Their fee is backed by what they provide for you. So instead of asking them to perhaps lower their fee, maybe ask, what are you providing me for this charge? Have your real estate agent explain to you everything they do for you. And if after they're done explaining that, you still don't feel they're worth this fee, then maybe it's best for you to try to find a different real estate agent. Or another option, perhaps you don't see the value in certain services that they are providing you. Maybe you can negotiate a lower fee and have them exclude these services that you don't feel are worth it or you don't feel are needed. Now, maybe those services are actually really key and you will want them in the end, but that's always an option for you to kind of ask a real estate agent to do less, and then they'll accept less money potentially. I mean, there are ways for you to pay a lower fee for a real estate agent. I mean, heck, there's discount real estate brokers and agents where they'll charge you sometimes just a flat fee or a smaller percentage of the commission than a full-service realtor tends to charge. Now, the key here, of course, is it's a discount brokerage versus a full-service real estate agent. With a full-service real estate agent, you are very, very, very likely to get a whole lot more effort and work put into your deal, whether it's listing the home or if you're looking to buy a home. A full-service agent is going to provide you a lot more than these discount services. For example, sometimes a discount service might very well just be a flat fee for every door they open for you. And then there's a fee for if they want to write an offer for you and then send that offer out to the sellers. Of course, this is just going to be an agent saying, so what do you want to offer? And then you'll let them know what you want to offer and they'll write that up for you and send it in. If that's what you want, then by all means, go with one of those discount services. But just understand that that discount agent is not going to care if in 1 month after you buy the home, the sewer pipe bursts, there's mold in the attic, or any number of potential issues that could arise if you don't work with a realtor who cares about the work they do and put in the effort, put in the research, put in the work to make sure this home is going to work for you and be a good fit for you. Because if you work with these discount service agents on the back end, after the deal's gone through, you've bought the home, you have a higher chance of being left hung out to dry and it end up being a bad house. So now that I've gone off on that little tangent, let's just get back to the facts of this case. First off, let's discuss the settlement amount. So it was a $1.8 billion lawsuit, and the current proposed settlement by NAR would have them pay out $418 million over 4 years. Where is that money going? I mean, this is a class action lawsuit. There's a whole lot of potential people who could get into this. Now, I haven't yet read anything that is exact about the distribution of this money. I've seen some people say how 30 to 50% of this very well might just go to the lawyers. I mean, so it's going to go without saying the lawyers and these firms are going to be getting a very nice payday. Well, the potential home sellers that are eligible, it's estimated that there's tens of millions of them. So maybe they'll get 10 bucks after this. Maybe they'll be able to afford an extra cup of coffee. So the lawyers, they're getting paid. We'll see what the home sellers end up getting. Now, the settlement specifically, what it's going to be doing is it's resolving claims against the NAR, all NAR members and association-owned MLSs, and eligible brokerages. So it's covering a very large majority of realtors and brokerages. Now, there's a few that aren't covered, but for the most part, it's going to cover a wide range. So there are a few out there that aren't covered by this settlement. I know I'm covered, so I got that going for me. And then another thing is NAR also agreed to a new MLS rule. The MLS is the multiple listing service, which is where real estate agents kind of look for the listings. That's where they get posted for realtors to look at, and there's other housing data available. And now there are really just three key points to this settlement to focus on. First, the settlement requires buyer brokers to establish an agency agreement with buyers from the outset of service delivery. Second, compensation paid by the seller must be negotiated in a decoupled manner, ensuring the listing firm's compensation is not tethered to any offer of compensation a seller may make to the buyer broker. Now, the third big key point here is, and any NAR MLS will be prohibited from publishing any seller offer of buyer broker compensation. So now, again, I'm based out of Washington. And here in Washington, we actually have already been implementing both the first and second change that this settlement would bring to the rest of the country. Washington State has required buyer brokers to establish an agency agreement with their buyers since January 1st of 2024. And then all the way back in 2019, Washington's Northwest Multiple Listing Service made it clear that sellers do not have to offer that compensation to buyer brokers. For us here in Washington, there's just one new component to this whole ordeal that we'll have to learn and we'll have to implement come July. And that's just no longer will the MLS be able to publish what the seller is offering a buyer brokerage. Now, the key point here is it's about the MLS publishing this. This also does not mean sellers can't still offer compensation. And in my opinion, I'll get to this later more in, but a seller offering a compensation is going to be beneficial to them and in the best interest for them in selling their home quickest and for the most. Now, getting back to the fact about no longer being able to post the compensation for a buyer broker on the MLS listings, there's still going to be a spot to see this, as it's just not going to be on the MLS. I'll still be able to post compensation for any of my listings on my website. A buyer is still going to be able to use my website through John L. Scott or other home search websites such as Homes.com or Zillow, and they'll be able to see that compensation that the seller is or is not offering to a buyer. It's just on the official listing on the MLS, the compensation is not allowed to be posted. So in my eyes, that new rule is really just going to be something real estate agents are going to have to adapt to and deal with, as it's just going to be the new way of life. You're still going to be able to find those compensations that is listed, whether it's going through the listing broker's website to see it, or just reaching out to them and seeing if their seller is offering a buyer broker compensation. Now, I do not see or predict this in any way destroy the idea of the buyer agent. That's something else that's out there in the media. A buyer still needs a real estate agent to get the best results when searching for a home. And I see no reason why the seller will stop offering the compensation to the buyer broker. As like I mentioned before, a seller offering compensation is another way to bring more buyers to the property. As many buyers, especially in certain price ranges, when you get down to the less than a million, when you get down to the less than 600,000, this is often first-time home buyers. This is often all the money they have to close this deal. Now you're going to ask them potentially to pay another 2.5% or 3% to a real estate agent. That's just not feasible. So if a seller is not offering compensation, then it's going to take their home out of the running for these buyers. However, if they do offer that compensation, it's going to bring more potential buyers who would be able to afford that home. It will help sellers sell their home quicker. So by offering this compensation, a seller would be making their home more appealing to a wider number of buyers than if a seller is not offering that compensation to the buyer broker. And for that reason alone, almost, you could say, a buyer agent is not going to disappear. Buyers will still need help with real estate transactions, as transactions are very complex. And having someone who is an expert in that field by your side to help you navigate these transactions is a valued commodity. And I don't see the model of sellers offering buyers agents compensation disappearing under these new rules, because quite frankly, it just makes too much sense for a seller to pay those commissions than for them to flat out stop offering it. So while there are new rules that potentially will be implemented come July, for us here in Washington at least, I don't really see much changing or there being that big of an impact on everything. Now, if you have any other questions about this settlement or just anything at all, of course you can always reach out to me and I'd be happy to talk it over with you and help out. And now, with this being a solo episode, if you're an RE Radar follower, you know what's coming up, and that's the random U.S. city. We're going to go to a random U.S. city, check out the market, as here I'm based in Seattle, so I know all about this market, but it's always interesting to see how different markets are across the United States. And for today, that random city that I'm jumping into first is Salisbury, Maryland. Salisbury has a 2024 estimated population of 33,413. And for people watching on video, you're going to see some of this data on the screen. If you're listening, you're going to still get all the great information. You just won't get the cool pictures. Now, so 2024, Salisbury had a population of 33,413. 2020, it was 32,798. So slightly up. Now, the real estate market in Salisbury is as follows. The median list price back in March was 259.9 thousand. Median sold price was 250.9 thousand. That median list price is up 3.4% from March in 2023. So the real estate market is on the rise here, it appears. And what is this market? It's a balanced market. This is the first balanced market city we've talked about here on RE Radar. What a balanced market simply means, supply and demand are seen as equal or close to equal. Neither the buyer or seller would have the so-called advantage in this housing market. Now, median days on market here, 51 days. So with being a neutral, balanced market, homes aren't flying off the shelves like they are in other seller markets. And according to Realtor.com, comparing that to Seattle, which is a seller's market, median days on market in March was 26 days. So about half the time. So what exactly is out there on the market in Salisbury for a home? Well, here I have pulled up a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bathroom, 2,220 square feet, 2021 built home listed for $369,000. This property has some great features. It boasts a 2-car garage, along with a good sized backyard that's fully fenced in. What a deal! Well, here in Salisbury, Maryland, that home has been on the market for 179 days. So, what looks like an amazing deal for someone used to a market like Seattle clearly isn't as amazing deal as it might be, or something is wrong with this home. There's something up with it where this home's not going off the market, even at the average they have there, which is 51, in the 50 range. I can't recall exactly what I said. So 179 days, well above the average in Salisbury. 369,000. It was built in 2021, good sized home, yet it's sitting. What that tells me somewhat also is that the city is actively adding homes. And what they're adding are single family units, at least in this northern area here of Salisbury that this home I pulled up is from. And perhaps that could be one of the reasons for the longer market time, as new construction appears to be constantly popping up in this area. So people might say, why would I want to buy this 2021 home when there's this 2023 home that just got finished, or 2024 just got finished in, like a couple that I've seen right around this area. Or who knows? So really just, it's hard to completely judge, but what this brings is there's more to it than meets the eye sometimes. Now, transitioning off of Salisbury, we're going to go south. We're going to keep with the S's and go to Stuart, Florida. Stuart, Florida is a very small city on the Atlantic coast. In 2024, it was estimated to have a population of 18,965, which is up from 2020 when it was 17,551. Now, with being in Florida and being on the Atlantic coast, you're going to get some beautiful beaches. You're going to get warm weather. But unfortunately, your home is also likely going to be in a high flood risk area, which Stuart, Florida most definitely is, according to riskfactor.com. There, they say there are 1,216 properties that have a greater than 26% chance of being severely affected by flooding over the next 30 years. That represents 74% of the properties in Stewart. Looking commercially, 530 out of 700 commercial properties in Stewart are also at a major risk of being severely affected by flooding. So something that people down there should definitely be keeping an eye on is the National Flood Insurance Program. As the NFIP is currently set to expire September 30th, 2024. If that does not get renewed in time, people might potentially be unable to purchase homes down there in Stewart, Florida, as a home in a flood zone, a lender could see too great of a risk without that NFIP available and not give out the loan. You're not going to be able to buy that home. So now with that knowledge and understanding that your home might be destroyed within the next 30 years due to the floods and that the NFIP might lapse, let's see what the housing market is looking like. Well, in 2024, March, the median list price in Stewart was $450,000. In March 2023, the median list price in Stewart was $450,000. Over the year, the change was flat. And looking at the actual chart here, ever since May of 2022, that median home list price has held very steady at right around $450,000, dropping to $430,000 sometimes, going up to $460,000, but really staying in that $450,000 range. Looking at the median home sale price, it's lower than that, with this past March being $420,000, and last year's March 2023, it was $415,000. Again, pretty consistent. Not really seeing an increase or decrease in the housing market. Realtor.com also is actually showing this as being a balanced market, just like Salisbury. They're claiming supply and demand is equal. But in my opinion, I think it's a little more of a buyer's market, as the list to sale ratio here is just 96.85%. What that means is on average, homes in Stewart sold for 3.15% less than the list price this past month. And you add in the fact that median days on market is 60, it seems like it might be favoring buyers a bit more, with them able to purchase homes for less than the list price. Homes are sitting on the market for almost 2 months. So I don't think it's a balanced market, but according to Realtor.com, it is. Now, instead of looking at a home on the market, I'm actually going to pull up a couple of homes that sold recently here in April. The first one is this three-bedroom, three-bathroom, 1,933-square-foot home on 0.46 acres or 20,000 square feet. And that one sold for $700,000 after 7 days on the market. The one I'll be comparing this to is a three-bedroom, two-bathroom, 2,495-square-foot home on a 10,000 square foot lot, and that sold for $875,000 after 20 days on the market. Obviously, there are different factors that could affect this pricing. But one component I'm going to bring up is the idea of that flood zone, the flood risk. That $875,000 property on riskfactor.com has a flood risk of 4 out of 10. They call that moderate flood risk. This $700,000 property has a flood risk score of 8 out of 10, and it's called a severe flood risk. Really, I just want to bring up here the idea of there's a lot of different factors outside of a home that can have huge impacts on home prices. It's not all about the homes with the most bedrooms or the most bathrooms or whatever it may be inside the home. There are outside factors that can affect the home prices. That is all the time we have for today. So if you have any questions about what I talked about today, feel free to reach out. Or if you have any real estate questions at all, reach out to me and I'm happy to help you. Till next time, I'm your host, Nathan Matheson. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Have a good rest of your day.